luck. And the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. And you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you could lend a hand in return.
Good morning and welcome to the Health Matters radio show with me, Neil De Silva. It's Monday, it's the 26th of November 2018, and we have a great show ahead of you this morning. In a moment, we're going to be starting off with talking about fasting, what fasting is, how it can benefit your health and how to do it safely. Then we'll be talking later in the show about drinking and driving, and obviously it's coming into the party season now. And people need to be aware of how alcohol impacts the body, how it affects the body, and some tips that you need to know if you do plan to go out drinking. And then obviously driving is not advised, but maybe the day after can also be a problem. And so we'll be talking about that later in the show. And we have a guest interview this morning with my special guest, Cindy Galvin. Good morning, Cindy.
Hi.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great, thanks.
It's great to have you on the show. And we'll be finding out more about Cindy's background and what she's now doing in about 15 or 20 minutes or so. So a quick disclaimer before we start. The purpose of the Health Matters radio show is to provide you with competent information on the subject matters covered and to help educate and inform you in ways that you can improve your own health. However, this is on the understanding that I'm not engaged in providing medical advice and the content in the show should not be treated as a substitute for such. If you have any concerns about your general health or you require medical or other expert assistance, please speak to a suitably qualified healthcare professional, which in many cases can be obtained by dialing 111 first or speaking with your local pharmacist. All content is provided for general information only, and I encourage you to do your own research on the topics that we discuss. And the show is based on my knowledge, my research, my experience, and often my opinion, and I disclaim any liability that is incurred from the use of or application of the content of the show. Okay, so fasting, or to be specific, intermittent fasting seems to be the thing of the moment. Lots of religions incorporate fasting within their beliefs, but actually fasting has a lot of health benefits in addition to just helping you to lose weight. Lots of people fast, but they don't always understand the reasons why they fast. So when you think of fasting, what do you normally think of? Well, very obviously, it's not eating, and it's not eating for a set period of time. That may be 18 hours, that may be 24 hours, it could be 36. In fact, the last fast that I did a few weeks ago was 48 hours. But most people couldn't imagine not eating, and certainly not eating for more than a few hours. So we're going to go through some of the benefits of fasting and how to do it properly. And if you've ever spoken to someone that's actually fasted in the past, and you ask them how they felt after they did it, most people will say, actually, it was incredibly empowering. It was liberating. And lots of people that I talk to that do fast can't wait to go on to their next one. But lots of people are actually scared to actually make that start and kick off with a fasting program. So here's some of the benefits of fasting. So fasting actually increases the body's resistance to stress. So stress can be partially caused by free radicals in the body. So these are unstable molecules that carry reactive electrons. And these free radicals can do a lot of damage to the body. They interact with other molecules in the body. They can change the dynamics of certain cells, and that can lead to more stress. And actually, fasting helps the body to restabilize these free radicals. One of the reasons, or one of the ways it does that actually, is when you do fast, it's encouraged that you keep your fluid intake up, and green tea is full of antioxidants, and green tea is encouraged while you fast. Fasting also improves brain function. So when you fast, your body produces more of a protein called BDNF, which is brain-derived nootropic factor. And actually, BDNF activates brain stem cells to convert into new neurons. And this triggers numerous other chemicals that promote neural health. And the production of BDNF has actually, in some research papers, been shown to protect your brain from cell changes that are associated with things like Alzheimer's and dementia. Fasting improves the immune system because, obviously, as we've covered, it reduces free radical damage. It also helps to regulate inflammatory conditions in the body. And when you think about it, when animals are sick, when animals are struggling with their health, they actually stop eating. And instead, they focus on resting to rebuild the body. And this is actually a primal instinct to reduce stress on their internal system so they can fight off the infections. And interestingly, human beings are the only species that when they are ill, they actively look for food, even if they are not hungry or they don't need food. So the animal kingdom have got it right. When they're not feeling well, they actually stop eating. And actually, you can improve your immune system by taking the initiative and stop eating before you get sick. The next one's a big one. Now, for those of you that know me, you'll know that diabetes and type 2 diabetes in particular is a big thing of mine, and many of my clients are type 2 diabetics. And when you fast, it helps to improve your body's sensitivity to insulin. Now, as I've covered on previous shows, insulin is essentially the hormone produced by the beta cells of the pancreas, and the hormone insulin helps your body to take up glucose from your blood. When you become insulin resistant, that can actually pave the way for some chronic diseases, and one of those, the big one, is obviously type 2 diabetes. Now, there was a study published by the World Journal of Diabetes that found that intermittent fasting in adults with type 2 diabetes improved key markers for those individuals, including their body weight and their glucose levels. Now, obviously, glucose levels are the big thing. And they also found that intermittent fasting was as effective and potentially more effective than doing calorie-restricted diets. So the 1,000 calorie, 500 calorie, 800 calorie a day diets, they found that intermittent fasting was actually as effective as those in reducing visceral fat mass and also improving fasting insulin levels and insulin resistance. So if you are a type 2 diabetic, then fasting can actually help you on your journey to improve your condition. And when you lower the amount of insulin in your body, that helps your body to break down fat faster, but also when you start eating again, it actually keeps your insulin levels lower than they were before you started fasting. And there are research papers that have shown that your blood sugar actually will stay more in control or in the normal range for longer after you've fasted. And in addition to having this improved insulin sensitivity, it actually allows you to tolerate carbohydrates better than if you didn't fast. And it's thought that the reason this happens is because the insulin that then gets produced becomes more effective in telling the cells to take up the glucose from the blood. So if you are a type 2 diabetic, and we'll come on to who should and shouldn't fast at the end of this piece, then you may want to consider fasting. Fasting also improves human growth hormone, or HGH. And HGH is a hormone that's naturally produced by the body, and it remains active in the bloodstream for only a few minutes. But there have been studies to use that have used HGH to treat obesity and actually to improve muscle mass. So HGH actually helps to increase muscle strength, and it helps your body to burn fat. So when you fast, the amount of human growth hormone actually increases, in your body, which is quite interesting. Fasting helps to helps with weight loss. So that's a very obvious thing. Now, the way that the pancreatic hormones work, you have glucagon and you have insulin, and these are the antithesis of each other. So one does one thing, one does the complete opposite, and you don't get both at the same time. So if your body isn't producing insulin, i.e. you're not eating carbohydrates, you're not eating proteins or fats, then your body has to look to its reserves to keep you going. And it does that by reducing the production of insulin and increasing the production of glucagon. Now, whilst insulin turns carbohydrates into fat, glucagon actually takes the fat stores and it turns those into a usable form of energy for your body. So if you do the odd intermittent fast, maybe once or twice a month, perhaps, maybe for 24, 36 or perhaps 40 hours, you're forcing your body to run on body fat. Now, the body is incredibly adaptive and incredibly complex and incredibly clever. And people will say, well, you know, if you fast, your body starts to burn muscle. Well, the body doesn't do that. The way we are designed is that if you're not eating, i.e., you know, if we go back to caveman days where, you know, we did live in periods of famine and feast, if you were in a position where you weren't eating for maybe a few days or maybe a week or longer, and you started to eat into your muscle mass, that would actually make you weaker from when you did have to go out and hunt. And the body isn't that silly. What the body does is it uses the reserve of body fat, and only when the reserves of body fat get down to around 3 or 4% will it start to tap into muscle mass. And for most people, they will never get down to 3 or 4%. Even high-end athletes have between 5 and 6% body fat. So for most people, that's not an issue. Fasting lowers the risk of deadly diseases, so things like cardiovascular disease and obesity have been shown to obviously reduce lifespan and lead on to more serious illnesses, things like diabetes. And fasting, as we've mentioned, will help you to reduce your weight if you are overweight. But actually, if you are of the correct weight, it can prevent obesity as you get older. And people do tend to actually put on weight and body fat as they get older and as their metabolism slows down. Fasting can also help to reduce bad cholesterol in the body. And again, bad cholesterol, LDL cholesterol, is linked to things like cardiovascular disease and heart attacks and strokes. But interestingly, fasting has been shown to not have an effect on the good cholesterol levels, which is the HDL. Fasting also improves hunger. Now, there is a hormonal balance that happens when you fast. And it's thought that because of this hormonal balance, it makes you more in tune to real hunger. So people confuse fasting with starvation. Okay, starvation is when you don't know what your next meal is going to be and you don't know when that's going to be. So there's plenty of people in the world who are genuinely starving, and it's a very sad state of affairs. But fasting is nothing like starving. With fasting, you know when your next meal is going to be because you've set that time and you probably know what that next meal is going to be. So there's a big psychological barrier to get over when you start fasting. It's actually just training your brain to get in tune with genuine hunger. And actually, from personal experience, having done a 48-hour fast, I've got to say, once I psychologically got over the first 12 hours, the rest was really easy because it was just training my brain to tell it, actually, I'm not hungry. I have plenty of fat in reserve. I'm not going to starve to death. And in fact, when we look at body fat and the reserve of calories in body fat, most people have dozens and dozens. In fact, some people have over 100 days worth of stored energy in their body fat. So really, you just got to convince your brain that you really aren't going to starve. And as I mentioned, fasting is a really good reset button for hormones. And one of the hormones is ghrelin. Now, ghrelin is known as the hunger hormone. And when you overeat, also you go to the other extreme and you diet and you have these really restrictive diet plans, they can increase ghrelin production and that will make you feel hungrier. And because of this this hormonal reset that happens when you do fast, you can actually normalise ghrelin levels and you can actually deal with hunger in a much more effective way, and you can control the hunger pangs. Because you've gone through 24 or 36 or 40 hours without eating, you can really get in tune with genuine hunger. So fasting can change your life. It can improve your health. Yes, it will suck at first because you will be convinced that you're hungry, when in fact you're not hungry. You just need to, you know, convince your brain that you can push through that struggle, those initial hunger pangs and stomach rumbling. You know, stomach rumbling has nothing to do with hunger, but we'll cover that on a future show. And just remember that fasting has become popular over the years, particularly with, you know, many, many religious groups. It goes back thousands of years with certain religions. But there are massive health benefits. So what can you drink while you're fasting? Well, anything really with no calories or low calories. So things like water, you can't beat water. Green tea is also good because there's health benefits to green tea. Herbal teas are good. Fruit teas are good. Vegetable broth is also very good. And you can actually drink normal tea or normal coffee, providing there is no milk or sugar in the tea or coffee. Can you exercise? Yes, you can exercise when you are fasting. But be in tune with how you feel. If you've got headaches, if you're feeling lightheaded, probably not good to exercise. And who shouldn't fast? Well, people that suffer from hypoglycemia, so low blood sugar, definitely shouldn't fast. Type 1 diabetics, it's generally with type 1, it's generally advised that you don't fast. And pregnant and breastfeeding women should absolutely not fast, because of the damage it can do to the unborn baby or to the baby if they're breastfeeding. And the last word is, if you're unsure, and again, please do your own research. This isn't a recommendation to fast, but if you're unsure whether you should fast or not, do your own research. Consult your doctor if you're not quite convinced or not sure, or talk to your healthcare professional. So after the next song, we are going to go on to our guest interview with Cindy. But before then, we have a classic from the Isley Brothers, and it's Summer Breeze.
Summer breeze all in my mind. Summer breeze all in my mind.
to hold me in the evening when the day is through.
You're listening to the Health Matters Radio Show with me, Neil De Silva. Some quick reminders of the show's social media feeds. On Twitter, if you would like to link up with me on Twitter, follow the show's Twitter feed or send me a tweet, go to Twitter and search at Health Radio Show. On Facebook, if you search the Health Matters Radio Show, you can like the show's Facebook page and you can interact with me there. This show and all the previous shows are available on the show's iTunes podcast. So go to iTunes, search the Health Matters Radio Show, and you can find the feed there. And also, they're available on the media page of my website. And you can also contact me via my website if you would prefer to in private. Go to www.i-nutrition.co.uk and you can drop me an email. So on to our special guest interview of the morning. I have with me today, as I mentioned earlier, Cindy Galvin. Good morning, Cindy.
Good morning.
And Cindy has a fascinating story to tell. And we're going to start at the beginning. So, Cindy, tell me, give the listeners an idea. What's your background and how did you get into doing what you currently do?
Great question. Thank you. Well, I guess my background is I've always been interested in the thoughts that we have and a little bit of health. I was born with some birth defects, and from the time that I was young up until I was about 17, I had to wear the ugliest orthopedic shoes known to mankind, which led to a lot of ridicule from kids because kids can be cruel. And I remember thinking at the time that, you know, why can't they see who I am on the inside rather than what I have on the outside? So I developed a great empathy for other people, and I wanted to help them not feel as bad inside as I was, although at the time, I didn't have any idea how to do that. But I had to go to regular doctor visits because of the problems with the legs, and I thought, I really like this idea of health and wanting to help people. So that was one thing that led me to where I am today. So that's, if you want to look at it this way, the beginning. And then the other side of it was as I started working, and I was doing a lot of work in trading industries and very intensive environments, and I started realizing the amount of stress that people are under, the bullying that can happen, the long hours that people have. I myself came down with chronic insomnia based on the schedule. I had some health issues as well. I was eating well. In fact, I was inadvertently fasting, getting back to what you were talking about, just because of the stress. And I thought, when I left my last role about 3.5 years ago, I thought, I want to bring together my interests in these areas. I want to work with people that are in high-stress environments, which, by the way, can be just about anything that anyone's doing these days, as you know. Mm. And it was finding the way in. How did I want to actually help people?
And it is interesting because we were talking before the show, and there is this common theme that's run through all the guests that have been on the show over the last year or so, where they've had a personal journey, they've had a personal experience, they've come out the other end of that experience, and many people don't, and they're actually using what they've been through to help other people. And we can see the pattern here, how you are in this high pressure environment, and probably like many people, you do feel locked in. You feel like there is no way out. You don't know where to go. Perhaps you do feel that there could be a solution, but you don't know where to look. Or even worst case scenario, you feel this is the best it's ever going to get.
Well, exactly. Another thing I would add to that as well is that you think, I can't show any fear. I can't let anyone see that I'm having problems with this, because to show that kind of weakness could be the death knell to your career. Absolutely. And the other thing that I have found is that people often feel locked into their roles because you're making a lot of money and you're miserable at what you're doing. You've got mortgages, children, and you're thinking, what else do I do? Or your ego's involved with it because I have this great job. The idea of what you're doing becomes more of what you are than you are, if that makes sense.
And I think there's many people out there listening that can probably relate to that. I was certainly one where, you know, having a quite high-powered job, quite a responsible job with a good title, but being profoundly unhappy.
Yeah.
but you just think this is life. And sometimes you don't realise that there is a better way of doing things. There are solutions out there.
And a lot of times people are only pushed into doing something different by circumstances that happen to them. I know very few people that actually make a conscious decision to move away from the stress that they have or to take the risk of stepping away from the security of having a well-paid job, because people are saying, what are you doing? You're stupid. How are you going to recreate yourself? So usually what will happen, and this happens with clients of mine, they've been made redundant. They're reaching a certain age, or companies downsizing or going out of business, and they think, what am I going to do now? Mm. And then I work with them. And this is my shameless plug for my book that came out in September. I'm just holding it up so Neil can see. Tangible proof. It's called More to Give, Stepping into Your New Life at Any Age. And I bring together in this book the things that I work on with clients. It's about, you mentioned it when you were talking about fasting. It's about rewiring your brain, taking charge of your brain, taking charge of your thoughts. And by doing that, by the way, you're also taking charge of your health insofar as your thoughts are directly influencing your body and your emotions. Like if you're coming from a place of having a lot of stress where you're working or you've got a lot of negative dialogue in your mind, I don't know what I'm doing, they don't like me, oh my goodness, I have a meeting coming up, I'm not prepared. If you don't get that emotion out of your body, it sticks with you and it's going to create health issues down the road. So this is what I have in the book. It's what I work with people. It's all about letting them know you have so much more to give. It's about counteracting the negative things they have in their mind through exercises I take them through.
And talking about writing, because obviously I'm sure people can realize by now that you're not from Kent or London or anywhere in the UK. You are actually from Chicago. While you were in Chicago, you became a reporter.
That's right. I had wanted to do different things, and I fell into being a reporter when I came out of undergraduate school and took a year off to earn some money before law school. And the local paper were looking for reporters, which I'd never thought of doing. But I went in with my philosophy papers, which was one of my undergraduate degrees. And I hounded the woman who was the managing editor, and she hired me. And I thought, I love doing this job because I was getting paid to be nosy and I was learning so much, meeting interesting people. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's what I was. I was an investigative reporter in Chicago because back in the day, that was the thing to do. And if you're in Chicago, it's covering the mob. So
okay,
that was fun.
Yeah.
And then I was hired by a company based in New York. They invited me to come out and see them. And I had an interview with McGraw-Hill, a large publishing company. And they hired me to cover the nuclear industry, which I found fascinating. And that kind of set me on a whole different career path, if you will.
Okay. And what happened from there? You went off to South Africa after a while?
I did after a while. I stayed in New York. I started a brokerage company in nuclear fuel. I went to South Africa because I'd fallen in love. And this was a man that was in the industry. And I took a sabbatical from the brokerage and spent time down there, which was fascinating. Mm-hmm. Traveled around a lot. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved going into different environments because you're learning and you're meeting different people and experiencing what's going on. So yeah, I did that for a while. And then I moved to England. I know you can't tell by the accent, but I moved here in 90. We were talking earlier. I go back to the States now, and if they say, oh, where did you come in from? And I say, London. See, I'm already rewiring their brain because they think, yes, you must be British. They'll say, oh, yes, I can hear this in your accent. No.
So, fast forwarding from there, it's where you are now that's of particular interest. So you're a licensed trainer of NLP.
That's right.
And some other things as well. Do you want to talk about those?
Yeah, sure. It's been an incredible journey the last couple of years of retraining as I wanted to figure out how could I best help the people in the way that I wanted to. And neuro-linguistic programming is one, which for those who may not be familiar with it, it's neuro-brain linguistics using words and programming. So here again, it's a technique for rewiring your thoughts, helping you to be happier, more productive, which then leads to better health. I've also been certified, one of the few, there's 200 of us in the world, certified in something called conversational intelligence. Mm-hmm. And this is the work I use a lot in corporations where it's about the conversations we have. Every conversation you have with someone is affecting your brain chemicals. And the way that we're talking, will mean the difference between somebody wanting to engage with you and actually do the work that you want to do. So it's very helpful in teams where you get lots of problems or a boss that's not working well, a manager that doesn't do things right. So it's a difference between wanting to work together versus shutting down, where the cortisol levels rise and get lots of stress and things. One of the things that I enjoy doing a lot is in an area called lifestyle prescriptions. And in this is all about finding the root cause of the ailments that we have. And it has to do with the belief about how our diseases are created. Over 80% of our chronic illnesses come from unresolved emotional issues. And this is getting a lot of attention in the medical world. I believe that some of this is starting to come into medical training in the U.S. And there's a quote from someone that I'd like to say because I think it sums it up. This is a woman called Dr. Candace Pert. She's a neuropharmacologist at the National Institute of Health and Georgetown University Medical Center. And what I like about this is she gets right to the point. She says, your body is your subconscious mind, lending further credence to your thoughts are controlling you. And your physical body can be changed by the emotions you have.
Hmm. There's a huge link, isn't there, between our psychological self and our physiological self. I think more and more people are now beginning to tune into that. But it just goes to show how important your thoughts are and how emotions obviously affect our behavior. And I'm not an NLP expert, trust me. I do understand a bit about NLP, but I'm not an expert. So in addition to writing your own book, you've contributed to a book that's coming out towards the end of the year.
Oh, that's right.
With some quite big names, I hear.
Yeah, thank you. It's a book called America's Leading Ladies. I'm one of the contributors. Oprah Winfrey has a chapter in there, Melinda Gates, and Mary Barra, who's the CEO of General Motors, I believe, and people like me. And I'm in the book writing about these very things we're talking about today because I'm passionate about people being able to understand they can take control of their thoughts that can make them happier. They can take control of their thoughts to help their health and just make much better decisions in life, feel happier. If they're in a situation at work where they're not happy, they can do things to change the way that's impacting them. So that's what I talk about in the book. Yes, and it'll be out probably later this year or early next year.
Fantastic. And some very good company, shall
yes,
we say.
Yes, yeah.
And that just goes, I think that's testament to your credibility to be in a book with those sorts of people.
Oh, well, thank you for that. Who
themselves are obviously very credible in their own fields. And you are a speaker as well, aren't you? You speak at regular events.
I speak at a number of things. I talk about confidence, esteem. I've just been invited by the UK Justice Department to give a talk to them. Somebody there heard me talking to the Cabinet Office earlier this year about growth mindset. Growth mindset comes in a lot in companies where you want people to have the right view of things. You don't want people on a team saying, well, we haven't been able to do it before. We always do it this way. Let's keep doing it.
Yeah.
There's a way of approaching things in a right way that makes you feel better, makes the teamwork engage more. And it's encouraging to me that the government wants to get used to this. But yes, I speak at lots of different things on different topics.
Brilliant.
Get the word out.
So let's talk more about the ways that you help people. Yeah. We've already mentioned about 80% of all chronic illnesses are caused by these unresolved emotional issues. Perhaps you can go into a bit more detail about lifestyle prescriptions, perhaps what it is, what it does, how it can help people.
That's great. Yes, it's lifestyle prescriptions is about finding the root cause of why we have the ailments that we have. So I'll give you an example of this. Someone might come in with eczema, and I'll know that if they have the signs of eczema on their face, this is them being in the regeneration phase. And you can trace this back if they've been in regeneration for a certain amount of time, then I know the stress phase was about the same amount of time. And it's about going back to that stress phase and understanding that the brain controls all the different parts of the body, and there's a certain part of the brain that's controlling the skin, and there's a conflict theme, without going into all the details in that. But by knowing these kinds of skills or having this information, I know that the brain relay that causes the eczema is all about loss of control. So when I work with someone, if they have this, I can say, what was happening to you? Let's say they've had the signs of eczema for a month. I'll say, let's go back 2 months. What was happening in your life at that time that you felt a loss of control in, say, a relationship or your business? And they think about that. And this always works. There's always something that comes up. And then it's about asking them to tap into the emotion that's related to that. And often what comes up is fear, anger, and it'll be on a scale of 1 to 10. And so it might be 8 out of 10. And then the next one might be 7 out of 10.
Yeah.
The first thing to do with lifestyle prescriptions is to reduce that emotion. And there's techniques to use to do that. One's called tapping. I might use NLP. I might do some hypnotherapy. Once they reduce the emotion on that, the other part of lifestyle prescriptions is giving people micro changes to incorporate into their life. And I see them every 2 weeks. Micro changes are important because it's hard for people to get started on things. And they're already so overloaded in life that if you give someone a lengthy list of things to do, let's face it, they're not going to do it.
Yeah.
The prescriptions you give are for their mind, the body, and their environment. So what do I mean by that? The mind could be meditating. It could be giving gratitude every day. These are things that we're all aware of and maybe not understanding the depth to which that they can influence our physiology, the brain chemicals, and our health. So that would be for the mind. For the body, it could be something, depending on what they've come in with, get a hug from someone. Hug yourself, you know, these kinds of things. The environment would be get out and meet with people or go out and give yourself a walk, this kind of thing. And once they've gone through the process, it is amazing that people will suddenly see the eczema will start to clear because you're getting rid of the emotion that's associated with it. So it helps in the immediate term, but longer term, you're helping people understand what the stress, if they can be aware of the emotions that come up when they're feeling stressed, they can then get on top of that and stop things from developing in their body.
And from a nutritional point of view, obviously as a nutritionist, it's really interesting what you say there about these conditions, because lots of people, when they have a condition suddenly appear, will naturally make a connection or make and potentially erroneous connection that it's due to their diet. So they'll develop a skin condition and they'll think, oh, I'm suddenly intolerant to dairy. And they'll go through a whole process of cutting out food groups, and it's quite a laborious and quite a tedious and potentially quite unnecessary process, because it might have nothing to do with their diet particularly. It will be due to their emotional state of mind, stress levels, those sorts of things. So if that happens and you know you develop a condition, don't automatically assume it's just linked to what you're eating and what you're drinking. There's obviously a lot more to it than that.
And I think picking up on your point, when people start doing that, when they start thinking I'm going to change things from my diet, they don't do it often in a regulated way. They're starting to listen to friends, they go online.
Yeah.
So they can often do more harm to themselves than not.
And it can be stressful.
Correct.
Which can add to the stress, which can make the condition worse, and then they go round and round and round in circles.
Yeah. Or worse yet, they might turn to steroid creams if it's eczema, for example, or go to their doctor to say, I need pills. And look, I think medicine has a lot of positive things about it, but why instantly rely on drugs or creams when it could be something that you can take care of? And in fact, if people, again, using the eczema as an example, if they put creams on to get rid of it, you're just putting your body back in stress because you're not allowing your body to heal itself.
Absolutely. Just dealing with the symptom and not,
that's right.
and not the root cause. Tell me more about thermography.
Ah, thermography, I love. So I have a unit called a thermobuzzer, and it's a unit that I can use. I do scans on people, and what I'm looking for is a 0.5 degree difference where I'm looking, and it could be on fingers, it could be one side of the body is warmer than the other side. I'm looking at specific areas of the body where the organs are. And the reason that this is important is because it doesn't necessarily mean something's wrong with someone, but it indicates cellular activity at some level. And I do want to say that in the States, medically trained what is it, diagnosticians? Easy for me to say. You know what I mean.
I do, yeah.
With the medical thermography units that they have a lot of research showing that it can detect things like breast cancer 10 years before mammograms. Now, I am not medically trained. However, this is all about preventive things. And if someone sees that they have heat indicating their cellular activity, we can again go into the emotions and release the emotions. Mm. And because this is non-invasive technology, they can actually see already the difference in one session. Say 40 minutes later, that heat will have disappeared. That's how fast and how significant the emotional impact is on our body. So it's a wonderful technique to have. And I'm actually seeing a lot more clients now who want to get out in front of things developing in their body, and they understand that they can take control.
So obviously mammograms are quite popular, and they are done routinely for women. Do you think that thermography will take over from mammograms at some point, or will they continue to work side by side?
I don't know is the honest answer. My feeling would be that they'll continue to work side by side. It's an alternative, and I believe that as it becomes used more and more research is done, then more women will turn to that. Although it's interesting that I meet a lot of British women who have never in their life had a mammogram, and growing up in the States like I did, it was something that you did every year, obviously pushed by the medical companies, but you just took it for granted that you did it. But the thing is, if there are any cancer cells in the breast when you have these tests done, it will spread them because you can imagine
it's
that
being compressed.
It's being compressed. Mm. So if there's something that you can use that already indicates a little bit of heat, then you can keep working on the emotion around that. And because we do have lots of research showing how our emotions lead to health issues, why not do this? I mean, I would never say to anyone, don't have a checkup, obviously. Go, if you have any concerns, go see your doctor. But I like the fact that it's an alternative and it's not invasive on the body. It doesn't hurt. Every woman that's listening to this that's had a mammogram goes, ow. Well, you don't have to have one.
Yes. I would think they're fairly uncomfortable, but never having had one done myself, but I would think they are fairly uncomfortable. Yeah. So, just to summarize how you help people, just to go over the LP again, and obviously with the thermography, in what ways do those services help people? Obviously, it helps people in the self-healing process.
That's right. By making them aware of the emotions that they have associated with their condition, giving them information about the conflict theme as to why they have this issue, you can release the emotions, and that kickstarts the body's healing process. So people who've gone through everything else, which is where I typically get them from, they've tried everything else, it's not working. This gives them control over that. They can see how their body's reacting. Their health is better. They can come for appointments. These are non-invasive techniques. I give them tools that they can use for the rest of their life in terms of, again, understanding the brain's impact on the body in addition to the emotions. And with the thermography unit, we can detect things before they develop into something more serious.
Wow, very interesting. So without obviously mentioning individuals by name, what sorts of successes have you had with clients? Could you give one or two case studies?
Well, I can. Thank you for asking. I did have a woman that came in to see me because there had been a great incidence of breast cancer in her family, and she was concerned. She'd heard me speaking at an expo at London Olympia earlier this year where I was talking about something else, but I was giving trials of the thermography, and she wanted to come in. So she did come in, and we did find that on the left breast there was a higher degree in a certain area of the breast. So we worked on that. And even in the first session, the temperature differential decreased. And she came back to me about a half dozen times because we were checking other things as well. And she now comes back every 6 months, and she felt that because of her family background, she would be a good candidate for having breast cancer, and it just hasn't appeared. And she's so much happier. And because she's happier, she's got less stress, less anxiety. So she's one. And then I had a fellow come in. I had all kinds of problems dentally, and his dentist kept saying, there's nothing wrong here, nothing's going on. We did scans of it. And I said, but you can see that you've got heat inflammation in this area. And he went to a different doctor, and they opened it up, and he had all kinds of problems that was going to that were going to lead to tooth decay. And he was able to get that taken care of. So those are two recent ones.
Fantastic. So obviously 2018, it's been a good year for you.
Yes.
Keeping you busy. Tell me what's happening in 2019. What's the plans for next year?
So the plans for next year is just getting the word out more about how you can control things in your life, both by the way that you're thinking and also by getting rid of unresolved emotions. I'm going to be doing some more work with my book that I've published and the one that's coming out next year. I've got a number of speaking engagements. And just getting the word out, I guess.
Fantastic. So obviously you've got, we've already mentioned your current book and the collaborative book that's going to be coming out as well, which is which is very, very exciting. And these public speaking engagements, absolutely, it keeps you there, doesn't it? Keeps you in front of people, in the public eye. And a bit like myself, it sounds like you are really on a mission at the moment.
I definitely am, just like you, yes. We just need to get the word out about these things because they're simple changes that people can do. This is the key thing. They're not hard. It doesn't take a great deal of study to get on top of it. It's things that are easy to learn and to incorporate in life.
Yeah, definitely. So we've covered, obviously, what you do and how you can help people, but who would be your ideal client?
My ideal client is someone that's feeling stuck or feeling unhappy, that has a lot of anxiety. They're just not feeling right. They've tried various things. They've read books. They've done meditation. Maybe they've had some hypnotherapy, which I do as well, but I have a kind that goes to the root cause. Anyone who feels, I need some help, I don't know where to go, and I'm tired of feeling the way that I am, or physically, or tired of feeling bullied and stuck in the job that I'm doing. These are the people that I want to help. And I'm doing a lot of work with corporates, and I'm happy to say that they're starting to accept this more. I can't go in to say I'm going to rewire your brain because I think they'd kick me out.
Yeah.
But I get in to talk about how I can get their teams working together. And once they see that that's working, they start taking it more on board, and I can lead in with some of the other things that I do.
Excellent. So why should people come to you? There's obviously a lot of people out there in the market that do things like NLP and EFT and tapping and what have you. What do you feel is a bit different about you?
I think two things. I think, first of all, it's my background in that I've run companies. I've been in charge of huge numbers of people. I was the manager of about 600 people in one of my roles. I understand the issues that people have when they're working in high stress environments. And I couple that with the fact that I've got a lot of training that I'm bringing together, which is all, it's the neuroscience, the NLP, lifestyle prescriptions, conversational intelligence. I'm looking at people from a lot of different varieties. So I'm not just focusing on one thing. So it's experience and training and the success stories that I've had.
Brilliant. So if people would like to get in touch with you, what's the best route for them to take?
Well, I've got two websites. They can go to one, which is cindygalvin.com, and the other one is cindygalvin.co.uk.
And that's Cindy with a C.
It's C-I-N-D-Y, and Galvin is G-A-L-V-I-N. And there's abilities to click a button, schedule a call with me. I'm happy to have a chat. I often go in and talk to companies about how they can do things. Happy to do that as well.
And your book is available on both sites?
It is available on both sites.
And I guess once the collaboration or the collaborative book comes out late this year, early next year, I guess that book will also be on your website.
That will
as well.
Be on the website. And I can say that one of the things I'm going to be putting up on my website soon will be a free workbook that goes along with the book that came out in September. So people that get the book can get the workshop, or can get the workbook to go out with it. In fact, you can probably get it without buying the book, but you won't get the full benefit of the book without having that. But I wanted to give people something that would get them deeper into the topics that I'm talking about so they can start making change.
And just a quick reminder of what your book's called.
Oh, thank you. It's called More to Give, Stepping into Your New Life at Any Age.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on the show this morning, Cindy. It's been an absolute pleasure to find out more about what you do and also about your really interesting and fascinating background. I'm really pleased that you came on this morning.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Thank you. Okay, so before we wrap the show up in a couple of minutes, I did want to cover a piece about alcohol and the party season. Got quite a lot to go through, so I may carry some of this over to the next show. But there's some things that we need to bear in mind. Obviously, we're coming up near to the Christmas period, and people will be going out partying, and inevitably, alcohol plays its part in these social arrangements. Now, I'm going to cover some of the basics of this piece, and we will cover this in more detail on the next show. But there's lots of things that will affect your body's ability to deal with alcohol. So this can be things like your weight, your sex, your age, how good your metabolism is, the food you've eaten, the alcohol you've drunk, how much alcohol you've drunk, whether you've taken medication, whether your liver is working properly or not. So there's lots of variables. But generally speaking, it takes about an hour to break down one unit of alcohol. So I'm going to give you this takeaway here. So bear that in mind. If you drink a bottle of wine, and a bottle of wine is 9 to 10 units of alcohol, it will take 9 to 10 units for your body to metabolize the alcohol for you to actually have that out of your system, 9 to 10 hours. And you can see the reason why the police are often around early in the morning as well as late at night, because they're catching people that gone out partying the night before, had a night's sleep, wake up in the morning, think they're okay, jump in the car, go to work, and then get pulled over. So it's a very big problem. People are actually getting a charge with drink driving in the morning after they've had a night out, not just the night before, but also in the morning as well. So please do bear that in mind. I'm gonna cover this in more detail because it is a really important piece to cover. You know, there's lots of myths around drinking and driving. There's myths about drinking cups of coffee, having cold showers, how we can trick a breathalyzer, which incidentally you can't. So I'm going to cover it in more detail on the next show. Suffice to say, there is no safe limit for drinking and driving, even though you may feel okay. You might only have a pint, which may technically put you under the drink drive limit. But actually, if you have an accident and the police feel like that the alcohol in your system, even though it's not over the limit, if they feel that the alcohol in your system contributed towards the accident, you can be charged. But we'll go into more detail about this on the next show, because we've got some really interesting pieces of information to cover about the way alcohol acts on the body. And again, as I mentioned, at this time of year, it's particularly relevant. So I would like to thank Cindy again for coming on the show. Thank you, Cindy.
You're welcome.
It's been great to have you on the show. A quick reminder of Cindy's website, which is www.cindygalvin.co.uk or .com. And her book is available on both sites. And look out for the collaborative book next year with Oprah and Melinda Gates. That sounds really exciting.
Thank you.
So after the break, we will have the Channel Radio News and Weather. A quick reminder of the show's Twitter feed, which is at Health Radio Show. Drop me a tweet. If you want to shout out, please go to Twitter. On Facebook, the Health Matters Radio Show. Please like the show's Facebook page and follow the show there. You can listen again to this show and previous shows on the show's iTunes podcast and also on the media page of my website, which is www.i-nutrition.co.uk. If you'd like to make contact with me for whatever reason, please do so through my website. If you'd like to come on the show, and Cindy has done this morning, and tell your story and talk about what you do and your business and how you can help people, please contact me through the website, my website, because I'm looking for guests going into January next year. If you have any questions in the meantime, please drop me an email or tweet me via the show's Twitter feed. So until the same time next week, I bid you a very happy and healthy week. Stay happy, stay healthy, and here's one last song to play you out.
The heart is a blue,